Hello, and welcome to the Brad Pitt Cast, the podcast about Brad Pitt.
A podcast in which me, Dan,
and me, Joe,
go through the chronology of Brad Pitt's filmography.
Mm-hmm. Starting with, you're so overcome by this film that we're doing,
yeah,
that I feel like the tone is, we've literally just watched the film that we're going to talk about today, and it's quite
together.
And it's quite a hysterical film, yeah. So I think we feel quite hysterical.
On edge.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really, it's absolutely one of the worst films I've ever seen. So we started last week with Ad Astra, Pitt's most recent film. Go back, listen to that episode, catch up if you haven't heard it. And then this week, we did Dark Side of the Sun.
The Dark Side of the Sun.
Yeah, that definite article makes the difference.
It's because there's only one.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's the most important one.
There isn't one. That's the other thing. There's no Dark Side of the Sun. It's a stupid title.
Well, there's a back and forth of dialogue where Pitt's character, they're looking at the moon, and his love interest says, like,
at school they teach you there's a dark side of the moon, which sounds makes school sound like some like a place that inculcates
fucking Hogwarts.
Conspiracy. Is what it sounds yeah, like. It's true. The whole and then Pitt responds.
Yeah, they don't tell you about the dark side of the sun.
Something like that. Yeah, it's a real. The peak dramatic moment of the film in which the title is said aloud by Brad Pitt in his first major role.
So this is why this is an interesting film.
It's the only reason why it's an interesting film.
100%.
There's no way we would have ever watched this film.
No.
Anyone would have watched it.
No. As I was watching it, the thing that this film made me think is that there are so many movies out there. You know what I mean? Sometimes you feel like I watch a lot of movies, and I watch a lot of, I suppose, weird, obscure movies, but fuck, man, there are a lot of movies.
Yeah. This might be most movies that we just never see.
Yeah, that was my sense, that there's this whole brand of films that are just inept, like ineptly made for no money in some Eastern European country that doesn't exist anymore, and you just never interact with them. You have no causal contact with them except for they're the first film of Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
But maybe we should start with, we had something we went over in the Ad Astra episode briefly, but just our relationship to Pitt and I guess who Bradley Pitt is. William is his first name.
Yeah, right? William Bradley Pitt.
William Bradley Pitt. Got a brother named Doug.
Douglas Pitt.
I assume it's Douglas. It must be Douglas.
It's got to be.
Someone on Twitter recently said that Doug Pitt looks like what it would look like if you had tried to draw Val Kilmer from memory.
It's very good.
Which is, rough. Imagine being fucking Doug Pitt.
Apparently, I think he's a philanthropist.
I think he's rich.
When
certainly.
We finish the Brad Pitt cast, we'll do a Doug Pitt cast in which we go through the career of Doug Pitt.
One by one.
He was also in one ad for, I want to say, Virgin Mobile, maybe.
Really?
Somewhere. And it was quite funny. He's got good comic timing. Well, the fascinating thing about Doug Pitt to me, as in Brad Pitt in relation to Doug Pitt, is you see photos of them besides one another, and Doug Pitt looks so much like Brad Pitt, and yet he's a perfectly good-looking guy. I do not mean to diminish Doug Pitt.
He might be listening.
Yeah,
Sorry,
this will be on the internet forever. He's got to do something with his time. But he looks so much like Brad Pitt, and yet he does not have the je ne sais quoi that Brad Pitt has. Right? He's not handsome. He's not he doesn't have that presence, that kind of striking whatever it is that makes you just want to look at Brad Pitt forever or talk about him over 48 episodes of a podcast series. And that's, it throws into light that there is something kind of uniquely and inarticulably special about Brad Pitt.
Exactly. There's all that talk recently about the idea that, what are octopi? Like, what's the octopus brain like? Like, the octopus brain is nature making consciousness twice. Like, the octopus brain is, doesn't look anything like the human brain, but it shares common qualities.
Yeah, it came to similar,
Yeah, and Brad Pitt feels like the kind of thing nature could only make once. Yeah. Nature made Brad Pitt, and then it tried again in the form of Doug Pitt, and it fell significantly short.
It made a completely different thing.
Yeah, he's...
Which one's the octopus brain and which one's the human brain? I think Brad Pitt might be the octopus brain,
it's
right?
True.
Because we don't quite understand him.
Which is this podcast, right? The whole point why Brad Pitt is a fascinating object to talk about, I think, is he feels like a uniquely American object.
Mm.
I think that's really interesting. He feels like...
Yeah, I agree.
Bret Easton Ellis, the author, talks about two periods in history. He says that there's Empire, which is like American independence all the way up till September 10, 2001.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Post-Empire, which is 9/11 till now. And to me, Brad Pitt feels like one of the few movie stars to straddle Empire and Post-Empire. Like,
I find that very compelling.
Like there is something so sincere about him, but so... octopus brain about him.
Yeah.
He's the strangest actor.
I think actually that is emphasized by this film that we watched today. But well, yeah, so for me, I think I am, like, I have a PhD in American literature, and my interest just continues to get drawn towards what I would describe as, like, an American vernacular. Mm-hmm. And, like, a lot of the things I like, what I read as a teen, one of the things that really turned me on to that style was Catch-22, right? And I read, you know, I got, obviously, as a young white man interested in America, got super into David Foster Wallace. I love the Mountain Goats. I think there's a sense of the band The Mountain Goats. I think there's a sense of...
Yeah, not ordinary, like actual Mountain Goats.
No. I mean, although I have nothing against them. But yeah, there's a sense of this kind of ordinary, everyday vernacular of Americana that seems so sui generis and so difficult to describe, but it is a kind of magical everyday speech. And you feel it when you go to America as well. I find just the way in which people are able to communicate with you in extraordinarily fluid and easy interactions that do not feel, I think, something I often feel in Australia is there is a kind of constructed awkwardness around incidental encounters. Mm-hmm. And yet Americans, not all Americans, obviously, but many Americans tend to be very good at those moments. And I think there's something about Brad Pitt's essence that seems to express the purity of those moments so well, mm-hmm. that, like, American ease.
Yeah. Well, I think that comes down to the thing that's always drawn me to Pitt is the fact that I really think Brad Pitt is at his best when he's doing very ordinary, average things.
Eating,
just moving through the world, being a thing in the world.
Yeah.
And I think what makes him so great is he has, as you say, that ease, but he's also very floral. Yeah. So he's easy and he's relaxed, but he's easy and relaxed in a heightened way that draws attention to how easy and relaxed he is.
Well, I think that's, yeah, and I think there's something in that. And there's something in that kind of American vernacular that I'm referring to that has to do with a performance.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's, you're aware that a performance is being undertaken.
Yeah.
But it doesn't feel contrived. It doesn't feel excessive.
Sure.
It feels natural. Brad Pitt feels so natural.
He does.
In most films.
Except for...
Not in The Dark Side of the Sun.
The Dark Side of the Sun.
Oh.
In a way, I'm glad that we started this podcast with Ad Astra for a lot of reasons. I'm glad because it gives us a chance to see where he is now and then to reflect. I'm also glad because no one would fucking listen to a podcast that starts with The Dark Side of the Sun. But also,
certainly no one will watch it.
No. But also...
You shouldn't watch it.
You absolutely should not. This is not a so bad it's good film.
Yeah.
In Dan and I talking about how outrageous it is, it will sound entertaining but it is...
No, it's not.
We sat there really having a tough time. I was really glad that I had Dan with me.
Likewise.
Because I don't think I could have made it through this film.
It manages to stretch out all its scenes so far past the bounds of necessity.
Well, it's not... Necessity is a good point, because
nothing is
necessary about this film. We there's it's a really
about 100 minutes long.
It's maybe. So fucking long.
It feels like 3 hours.
It feels so long. My first thought when I thought about the film, and we'll give an overview of the plot, and we'll go into a bit more detail in a second. But I guess my broad impression of the film is there was a piece about that writer, that Instagram writer Carolyn Calloway recently, who got in trouble on the internet for being part of influencer culture. And
she's kind of the apotheosis of the crass influencer.
Absolutely. And there was a piece about her, which I can't remember who it's by. I would give credit if I remembered. But it said something like, Calloway doesn't want to write. She wants to have written.
Mm.
And The Dark Side of the Sun is a film that its sole purpose is being a film.
It feels like it feels like someone was given... you know, $180 to make a movie.
Yeah, $180 is generous.
Yeah, and they were like, great, I want to have made a movie, absolutely. And then they did, but they had, like, it was made up as it went along. It has a premise.
It certainly has a premise. And a premise that actually, well, maybe that's the thing. It does, if you hear the premise, particularly Brad Pitt going on to be who he would, maybe the film sounds interesting, which is, Pitt plays a man named Rick,
Rick Clayton, is it?
Rick Clayton, I think so.
Pretty good Brad Pitt name.
I just realised that he's a Rick in... oh, no, he's not a fucking Rick in Once Upon a Time.
That's Rick Dalton, which is Leo, which is close.
Yeah, he's Cliff in...
There's only so many names.
So you've got to come across him twice. He plays Rick Dalton, who, for the first half of the film, is just in a full-body leather gimp suit.
Yeah.
For reasons that I think if you didn't know anything about the film, you would probably be confused.
You would be compelled, perhaps. You would definitely be confused.
The gimp suit has tiny eye sockets.
He's like little slits.
Which you can barely see out of. Pitt's voice throughout sounds incredibly muffled.
This is a crazy thing about the film, is it would be an extraordinarily easy film to record ADR for, to just play Brad Pitt dialogue, like re-record Brad Pitt's dialogue and play it again, because you do not see his mouth move, really, because it's covered by a mask, but they don't do that.
No.
That child sound. If you can hear that child in the background, that is how we sounded during during our viewing session of The Dark Side of the Sun. He's expressing our emotional tenor.
Yeah, because So what's it about? It's a guy who's in a gimp suit.
I mean, it's really like if you have seen Pulp Fiction, it's just the gimp suit.
It's 100% just the gimp suit. He even wears a motorcycle helmet over the top of it.
Yeah.
So there are these incredibly bizarre images. And he's Rick, and you eventually find out that he has a skin disease, which means that he just can't be in the sun.
Yeah, which we knew going into the film, which makes it seem a bit more sensical.
Yeah, it hurts the film. In fact,
the mystery is important.
I think you could push this film into, not masterpiece territory, but into better territory if there's no reason for Pitt to be wearing a gimp suit. If he's just a dude who's sometimes in a full-body gimp suit, just wandering through the world, that's something, right? But he's got this disease. He decides halfway through the film, he takes the gimp suit off and he decides to live his life. And that's pretty much it. And there's a romance. He meets an American woman because he's in some fucking Yugoslavian country.
Yeah.
And she falls for gimp suit Brad Pitt and not non-gimp suit
Brad Pitt, which makes the desire to live his life outside the suit all the more baffling.
Yeah. And that's this fucking film.
That's the whole film. But nothing
also
else.
Also, this film...
Brad Pitt has a family around him that doesn't really do much. They don't... Like, they seem vaguely upset when they discover that Brad Pitt is insisting on taking the suit off, meaning that he will die in 3 days. They're perturbed by this.
Yeah.
But the horror... And the promise is that he will not simply die. He will... get boils and sores all over his body and die an excruciatingly painful death.
And everyone's quite like, fine with this.
Yeah, they're not thrilled. But, like, there are moments of, you know, they're unsettled and they would prefer it wasn't happening.
Yes.
But no one is reacting proportionately.
No one's like, hey, man, I'm going to fucking stuff you in this suit.
No,
like,
exactly.
You matter to me.
His parents, who have also specifically gone to Yugoslavia, it seems, after many other places, it is suggested, to find a mystical healer who will solve Brad Pitt's skin disease that is very rare, we are told.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. This sucks. This movie sucks so much.
But this is we've gone through...
And so, Brad Pitt's not good in it. We'll talk about that.
No, Brad Pitt is very
bad. He's
bad.
He's worse. I don't... Like, if you've seen The Room, I think Mark, the character from The Room, kind of resembles Brad Pitt in aesthetics. He's a bit bro-ish, kind of boyishly handsome.
Floppy blonde hair.
Often exclaiming things. There is a literal, almost a scene that seems to be referencing The Room. A scene where Brad Pitt, in his gimp suit, throws a cardboard box back and forth with some stranger he encounters. But it's Brad Pitt is worse than Mark in The Room.
Yeah.
In this film,
it might be one of the most embarrassing performances I can remember seeing on screen.
Yeah,
I can't really think.
We hate Brad Pitt. This is a podcast. This is the podcast where two guys hate Brad Pitt.
Where we discover we thought we liked him, but actually we discover we fucking can't stand him. So that's what the film is about, right? In the broadest strokes. But what is this film about? What does this film have on its mind?
I mean, if I were to make an argument for this film,
mm-hmm.
I mean,
please,
if I had a gun to my head,
yeah.
I think there's a sense in which we have. Something about a
I saw something in your eyes. I believe in you.
There is about sacrificing things to engage with the world. Brad Pitt, it turns out, is a poet. He's obsessed with Edgar Allan Poe.
Is he a poet though?
I think that was said on a blurb that we read somewhere.
Yeah,
he does say a line once, and his romantic interest asks if he's quoting someone, and he says something like, "I've just got a lot of time on my hands," which again doesn't make sense.
No.
We'll return to the things that don't make sense about this film, which is all of it. But there is something to be said about he makes an enormous sacrifice in order to engage kind of sensually mm-hmm. with the world.
Sure.
Which is that is it better to live in a gimp suit or swim with a dolphin, which he does briefly. The crew filming this film saw like a sign where you could like hop on a boat and go swim with a dolphin for like you know, $20. And they were like, fuck yeah, we'll take advantage of that and film Brad Pitt swimming around in the ocean.
We have to talk about it.
I guess we've got to do this chronologically.
I guess so. But
we've got to relive this experience.
It's interesting you say that. I see that because broadly, what do I think this film has on its mind? I think it has sickness, like in the broadest terms. Disease. And it has America because they are Americans in the Czech Republic. But even you saying, you know, it's a film about reconnecting with the world, you don't care about Brad Pitt.
You don't care about anyone.
You don't care about anyone. There's no sense of an arc. Pitt, spoiler alert. Spoiler alert for The Dark Side of the Sun, everybody. Real sorry. Pitt, he dies at the end of the film.
That's not technically. Dying is true. Implied. He will die. It's not ambiguous.
No.
You know,
he drives off into the sunset. That's true. Literally. He's not dead. Anyway, maybe we should go through this fucking piece of shit chronologically. Interestingly, so recently, it's, you know, my diet in terms of cinema is mostly exploitation cinema and horror cinema and weird shit. I have been watching a lot of Ingmar Bergman recently, which is unusual for me to watch.
One of the greats.
Watch someone that people think is actually great rather than just watching, like, Meet the Feebles. And Bergman is obsessed with sickness. And Bergman is obsessed with isolation and loneliness.
Ailing, right?
Yeah. Being sick, being isolated, being sad. And in the weirdest way, this film to me felt like if you made a computer watch like 6 Bergman films in a row, made it watch Cries and Whispers, and you gave it to like a machine learning thing and you were like, your turn now.
Yeah.
Maybe this is what you get.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Maybe. But also the computer has to be like, someone has to have poured Coke onto the hard drive and it has to be like...
Definitely.
Yeah. It's a baffling film.
I think that makes sense in that there are a number of very... I mean, at your most generous, you could call the scenes meditative.
Wow.
They are slow.
That is the most generous I have ever been to anyone. Yeah.
There's a sense that there are these very drawn out scenes that have no reason for being drawn out.
It's padding. It's obviously so padded. And it made me think, you know, something that I broadly believe to be true. Almost every single film ever made, and as we discussed before, there are a lot of films made. I would say 95% of films ever made could be 30 to 40 minutes shorter.
This film could be maybe 40 to 50 or 60.
This film could be 20 minutes long. But do you know what
it could pack in? That's not facetious. It could pack in all its substance in 20 minutes.
100%. But most films that I see, I'm like, just fucking cut to the, you know.
Or just end 20 minutes. Like, most films would be far more interesting if they ended 15 minutes earlier than they do. Yeah. I really believe that.
Yeah. Hitchcock said that the length of a film should be directly correlated to the capacity of the human bladder.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely.
It's really true. I should not be bored when I watch any film. And The Dark Side of the Sun, I'm bored from the first frame. Which is,
it's motorcycle?
Yeah, it's Pitt on a motorcycle.
We don't know it's, I mean, we know it's Pitt, but the viewer doesn't see Pitt because he's, again, in his full, like, black. So the black leather covers his entire body.
And it's worth pointing out, like, when I heard about this film, which was when we decided to do this podcast, I had never heard about this film.
Nor prior
to
this.
I was like, oh, Pitt in a fetish, in a gimp suit. Maybe what we'll be watching is, like, a fetish object.
Yeah.
And it's worth pointing out, there is nothing sexual about this film whatsoever. It's a sexless film.
I mean, there's a sex scene, but it's a sexless film.
Yeah. It does have and it has some talk about sex and it has nudity, but there is no sense in which...
There's no sensuality, which is interesting because I just argued that it's a film about sensuality.
Well, that's the thing, right? What the... I think that's the problem, that this film, it wants... It's a... we should say the director, whose name I don't even have anywhere.
He never
made anything substantive ever again, this director. He's not someone who just like ended up going on to make one or two interesting things.
No.
He's a trash director, even by most standards. There's no sense in which he cares about any of the story. There's no sense in which what I thought we were going to see was like, oh, this is one guy being extremely weird and like going through all of the things that he finds attractive. But what it actually is it's one guy clearly trying to get the Americans to take notice of him.
And he thinks he's making an American-style film, is how it seems.
He wants the Americans to pay attention so he can go to America and make, like, I don't even fucking know.
Wild Bunch.
The Wild Bunch. I'd see, you know, it's...
I don't know why I said that. Well,
there's an element of the old Western about this film. But it is true that, like, you know, this film has a deeply confused idea of what America is like. But it also...
It feels like Eurovision conceptions of America. It's very kind of corny.
Exactly.
Cliche, but not even... Like, cliche missing the mark.
And it's certainly true that a guy wanting the Americans to pay attention to him, but also just having no voice. I just don't know what this guy...
Sorry. Yeah, he has no...
I don't... This film, which I guess is why I'm mentioning the computer thing, is like, who... Like, what does he want? What does this director want?
So I just remembered the film's thesis statement. One of the reasons I was looking for my notebook is that the opening shot is actually of Brad Pitt's head, mm-hmm. mask covered. And he says, "I want to live," and then screams louder, "I want to live," and then says, "Sometimes I wish I'd never been born." Which is notable. So, I mean, we have a contradiction from the get-go. It's like close up on the helmet. Yeah. Oh, that's right, because he's wearing a motorcycle helmet, which, because he's riding a motorcycle around, he is riding down a highway in what I noted at the time is almost a Lynchian shot, in that it is the camera like mounted, as if the camera were mounted to the front of the motorcycle and is just filming the road for an extended period of time as the opening credits roll. And then Brad Pitt spots a dead American dog.
Oh, first, the dog.
Which, again, is not paid off in any substantial way.
Well, that's the thing, right? This film is solely comprised of subplots. All this film is subplots. Like, that's true. There's nothing else. B-plots. Yeah, it's exactly.
It's a B-movie in that way.
Which is where the padding element comes from. And yeah, he finds a dead dog, and he finds a puppy next to it. And you see the puppy later.
Being held against the chest of a shirtless Brad Pitt.
Yeah, which is obviously the money shot.
Like. Yeah. But so he takes the puppy, he puts it on the bike. There's a shot of the puppy being like caressed between him and the bike as he rides along.
Sure.
And that's the opening sequence, and then he arrives at this kind of villa.
Which is where he lives. You get a sense, I think, a vague sense that Pitt and his dad are wealthy, that they have money.
Yeah.
Because the whole reason that they're in wherever they are is some Eastern European country.
Yeah.
Czechoslovakia,
I think. Let's say it's Czechoslovakia. If it turns out not to be, we apologize to whoever we slighted or the Czechoslovakians.
Yeah. Because they've come there to get a healer.
So you see the healer is like some mystical figure.
He looks like Moses. Yes. And said at one point, "Is this Moses?" Which I think when
he also looks like Jerry Seinfeld's Uncle Leo.
He does.
It's like a combination of Uncle Leo and Moses. Does. He has a staff.
Yeah,
yeah.
There's definitely a sense as we were watching the film, I think, that we were straining, hoping that the film would do something to really shock and surprise us.
Anything interesting.
For instance, if that was actually Moses walking into the film.
Amazing.
But this is...
Maybe.
This is a broader point I have about cinema, right? And as I say, I'm someone who watches a lot of exploitation cinema, and we've talked about that being, like, my diet, and, like, is that good for me? Like, is it, like, eating McDonald's every day? And you once said, like, I wonder if it's, like, holding a magnet to a compass. Like,
yeah, does in terms it of throw your taste.
Best? Because, like, there are a lot of films that I like that a lot of people don't like. But what I think watching a lot of exploitation does do, which is maybe the magnet to the compass moment, is it makes you always think the best option is the biggest, craziest option in any scenario.
Yeah.
I think watching enough exploitation makes you think, like, with this film. So, you know, this guy's writing this film. He wants people to watch it. Why didn't... He's in the writing, you know. He's in the booth. He's, like, got the typewriter. He's got, like, a mountain of cigarettes he's put out in the ashtray. Why doesn't he think Moses should walk in right now?
Yeah.
Why not do something fucking crazy? Because that would be so shocking as to elicit a reaction.
I think that one of the infuriating things about this film is the crazy things that are done are so unambitious and confusing.
That they... It feels like...
Because there are some crazy decisions.
That's true.
But they're so uninteresting.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I just don't know why he didn't. You know, you're making basically a boy in a bubble movie.
Yeah.
Which there are many of those films. So my first question is, what draws you? Why does this guy want to make a boy in the bubble movie? Like, I don't know anything about this director's fucking name.
No.
You know, but does he? Is there some true pain? Because there's no semblance that anything in this film is an emotion that was felt by a human being.
Have we, I mean, I feel like this film has made me lose my mind. Have we said that if Brad Pitt is exposed to the sun at all, he dies in 3 days? That's the premise.
Sure, that's, but even the 3 days thing is mucky because you expect he's in a gimp suit.
Yeah.
The villa where he is with his parents. He arrives back at
this villa with his parents. He gives one of them a puppy.
It's extremely dark.
It's shot insanely. It's shot from like waist up at a from across the room.
Sure.
When you first see him enter and like interact with his father and a servant.
Yeah.
His mother is, it turns out, is an invalid.
Who's very sick.
He seems to be dying.
She's the one who made me think of Cries and Whispers, right? Because Cries and Whispers is the Bergman film about sickness. It's about like...
I haven't actually seen Cries and Whispers.
It's fantastic.
I'll check it out.
It's like three sisters.
I'm sure it's better than The Dark Side of the Sun.
Well, but similar, right? In a weird, cockeyed kind of way. Because that's also about three sisters in a big house on a villa and one of them is dying. And there's a shot where Pitt walks in and his mother's sitting by the window and she's looking sick. And it's almost exactly plucked from Cries and Whispers.
Hmm.
I don't think it's a conscious imitation.
An illusion.
But certainly, in the first 20 minutes of the film, where I was giddy enough, I was like, I'm sitting on a couch with my friend Dan.
Yeah.
We've got pistachios, we've got cheese and crackers.
Brad Pitt's in a
gimp suit. This will be fine. Oh, look, his mum's sick. There is some sense in which...
There are stakes.
The mum goes away for maybe an hour. She comes back at the end of the film.
To do nothing more than she did at the beginning.
What is she sick from? Who cares she's sick? At one point later in the film, they're having a party upstairs and she wheels to the top of the stairs and then wheels back to bed like she can't get down the stairs.
Yeah.
Anyway, so from there, what the fuck happens? His mum's sick. He goes into town in a gimp suit.
Because I wrote this down, there is an event in town, in the town square, which is one of the maybe 4 to 5 sets in this film. We return to the town square maybe 18 times. The event is the International Theatre Fest. There is a banner announcing the International Theatre Fest is coming to town. Theatre Fest. Not festival. The banner says fest. Cut in between Brad Pitt arriving at the fest and Brad Pitt leaving the villa is four Americans in a van.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell they're Americans because they're all drinking Heineken and one of them belches. That's the first introduction.
And he's wearing a Hawaiian shirt.
Yeah. And they're very... So the three men and a woman, and the men are all awful.
Her name is Frances, the woman.
Name is Frances.
The worst of the men is named Ed.
Ed, yeah.
He's the baddie. That's the thing, right?
Like, yeah.
He's briefly the baddie. You think maybe what this film is going to be is that, like, the film is obviously trading on leper imagery, right? That, like, sure. Brad Pitt is a...
Outcast.
Is an outcast. Mm. He's a physical and a social leper. So you think maybe the introduction of Ed... And the very beautiful Frances is the idea that there was this like handsome picture of masculinity, Ed, who like
she's not a real man. Yeah.
No, he's extremely ugly.
He's a slob.
And so you think maybe that Brad Pitt is going to lust after her, but she'll actually love Ed. None of that happens.
No,
Ed is a dickhead. She doesn't like Ed.
She hates Ed from the get go.
Nobody likes Ed. Poor fucking Ed.
Mm. I mean, he's probably had some trauma that has resulted in him being like this. 100%.
If you're sitting in a van in fucking Czechoslovakia going to a theatre fest,
these are like as in Hamlet when the players turn up. These are performing players, peripatetic players who are heading to the theatre fest.
Yeah, and drinking Heineken. That guy is. There's some dark shit in his past.
Definitely, you know? But he is left unexplored, paper thin. So we see them. They arrive at the theatre fest, as does Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
I am just describing this film.
It's a tough time. And it's maybe now is the time to bring up the fact that, Pitt is awful in ways that you could not imagine that Brad Pitt
genuinely
should be.
Extraordinary. And now then that would also be the time to bring up the fact that he is 25, not a child. He looks like a child when he's revealed, when he's unmasked. But he is... In every way you can imagine an actor being bad, he is bad.
Catastrophic. It's a genuine catastrophe.
Yeah. It's like, as I was saying before, I don't know if I finished this thought, but he is worse than Mark in the Room.
Yeah.
Mark at least is trying under what clearly are very difficult circumstances. Ed Sestero, is that guy's name? Greg Sestero.
Greg Sestero.
That's right, not Ed. Ed on the brain. Greg Sestero puts in a much more effortful and convincing performance. Maybe not effortful, because that's the other tragedy of this performance. Brad Pitt is clearly trying.
He's trying too much. This is not a phoned-in performance. This is, and when I was thinking, like, this is a catastrophe. What makes this a catastrophe? I think the answer is Brad Pitt is extremely keen to impress in this film. He's obviously as you say, he's 25. He's someone, he studied journalism at uni.
Huh, I didn't know that.
But movies were a portal for him, he described it. So this is a guy who loves movies.
Like us.
We should say that he's had some bit parts. This is his first starring role. It's not his first film. He's done TV movies, he's done stuff. So what I see in this performance is someone who thinks, this is it.
Top billing.
The top billing, first name on the call sheet, the director's coming over and telling me about my motivation. Like, I have to hit this one out of the park. That is combined with the fact that he's in a fucking gimp suit.
Mm.
So he is so restricted. You can't see his face for half the film. So he completely overacts in this robotic...
Both vocally and gesturally.
His voice is... I wrote down... I did not make many notes. My first note is pitchy voice. To call it a pitchy voice is almost an understatement. He sounds like... You know, in the last episode, the Ad Astra episode, we were talking about the voiceover in that film, and I said something like, Brad Pitt's voice sounds like wood cracking.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Here it sounds like, I don't even know.
Panpipes.
Yeah, it sounds like Muzak. Like,
yeah, it does.
Elevator Muzak. It is...
Yeah, or like a Euro disco beat at the worst party in Ibiza you can imagine.
Yeah, he sounds... deranged in the worst possible way.
Heightened, almost hysterical.
Absolutely. Because as you say, he's, you know, as we said last time too, like what's exciting about Brad Pitt, he's big, he's ornamental, he's floral. And you can see the origins of that in this film, I think.
There are moments, there are flashes.
Sure. Yeah. And you can always see him wanting to do stuff. As you say, even there's a scene where he's just like carrying a box and he's flipping it and he's thrown with a friend and it's like the football in the room. He's always trying, he's throwing his body around the place, he's trying as hard as he can, he's taking every opportunity and missing every single one. I don't think he lands a single line, emotional beat, action.
He's outshone by the dullards around him.
Yeah.
And there's not a good actor in this film.
No, not a good actor in this
film. There's a guy who pronounces Frankenstein. He's more impressive than Brad Pitt.
He's a French guy, apparently. Okay. Someone in the film later calls him French, but he does not seem French.
Doesn't seem French.
No.
Real placeless film.
A real placeless film. I mean, you and I saw Rambo Last Blood recently.
We did. At the cinema.
Which is like, talk about misfires. Rambo Last Blood. Is also a misfire. Better than Dark Side of the Sun, wouldn't you say?
I agree, yeah. I'm not endorsing any of its politics.
No.
I accept that it's better than The Dark Side of the Sun.
And that's a film that's meant to be America and is shot in, like, generic Eastern European. And to me, it feels like The Dark Side of the Sun and Rambo Last Blood, like, share the same universe.
I agree.
There's a sense
cheap.
Of, like,
well, they're both cheap,
they're
right?
They're cheap, and everyone's wandering around, like, they... I've had a stroke, or they've had their memories wiped.
Definitely, there's a kind of English language instruction type quality.
Sure.
I think one other thing about them is there's a sense that if you were to move the camera, you know, 5 feet to the left, you would suddenly reveal something that would destroy the world of the film. Everything is like there'd be kind of a glacier there or a supermarket.
Sure.
There's like a sense of we only have very limited terrain on which we can film this movie.
Wes Craven once said about Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which is like... maybe my favourite film ever made, certainly in my top five. Wes Craven once said that film feels like a serial killer killed someone and stole a camera and made a movie.
Yeah.
So does The Dark Side of the Sun. This film feels like a confession, like a coded confession of some terrible crime that you've committed.
That's definitely true.
And you have to try and...
Tell the world.
You need to tell people, so you put clues...
Yeah.
Because what even, like, we're trying to go through the plot, but
we're having trouble, aren't we?
Because there's the theatre fest, he falls in love with Francis.
I feel like there was something interesting. I wrote some stuff down. Hellish. Oh, there's one of the words.
Dan wrote those notes in his own blood, I should point this out.
There was a moment where... Joe pointed this out during the filming. There's a kind of a military parade, which is one of the most lackadaisical, kind of relaxed military parade I've ever seen. They look like... extras in the Beach Boys California Girls video. There are these women kind of twirling staffs so lazily.
Yeah.
And there are kind of men dressed in naval gear. There are some trumpeters at some point who are uniformed. And Joe pointed out that it does feel like something, and a lot of this film feels like this. Something was happening, some kind of drama against which Brad Pitt could be the background inserted. Against, which he is inserted, and they just thought they should film it.
Yeah.
It doesn't really, because this isn't a theatre fest.
No. There's a single sign that says theatre fest. Almost no theatre goes on. Yeah, because I was thinking about the, like, filming stuff documentary style and then inserting your actor in.
Yeah.
And that was a beloved method by a exploitation filmmaker called Larry Cohen, who's, like, a really interesting New York filmmaker who made, like, great films, really weird films. And he did that notably for a film called Q, The Winged Serpent, which is about, like, a pterodactyl monster.
Nice.
And he filmed, like, on top of the apartments in New York and was, like, firing fake guns and shit like that. And that translates into an urgency into the film.
Yeah.
The interesting thing with The Dark Side of the Sun is...
it is interesting.
There's no urgency.
Not in the entire film.
It doesn't feel like...
There's a motorcycle race later, which is the least urgent motorcycle race I've ever seen. Holy shit,
the motorcycle race is insane. Where are we? I think...
We're at the theatre fest.
We're blasting...
So Brad Pitt meets this woman at the theatre fest. Mm-hmm.
Frances.
And he's besuited, and he has an interaction with Frances...
And she calls him the Dark Rider. I think he wins her over on account of being kind of weird and mysterious.
I mean, this is part of the landscape of the theatre fest is that a lot of people are wearing masks, sure. Not everybody. So he can kind of
blend.
I mean, it's a very weakly executed premise, but I guess that's the point. Is he makes some comment when he's leaving to go that he can win best costume or something.
Yeah. Which is the other major thread of the film, really, is this idea that, like, you know, we were trying to say, what's it like? You said Cyrano de Bergerac. It's just this trope in literature where you have, you know, Superman, right? We're talking about Superman. Superman has these two identities. He looks very different, although actually doesn't. That's the weirdest thing about Superman. Superman looks exactly like Clark Kent. And he has to live this kind of double life. And people who matter to him as Superman don't matter to him as Clark Kent, and vice versa. The film trades on that in the most dogshit, bonkers possible way.
Yeah, very
Everyone loves gimp suit Pitt. Yeah. And everyone is less interested in regular Pitt.
Yeah,
but, revealed Pitt. But Pitt, the halfway point of the movie, Pitt's like, I leave this terrible gimp suit that's trapped me in the past and live my life naked, free, fresh.
Everyone hates
him more!
Yeah, no one's interested
in him.
Keep
the gimp suit
She falls in love with the suit Pitt. But this is her, okay, so after the theatre fest, some stuff happens at the theatre fest. Who cares? Uninteresting. He goes back to the villa and has had some revelation after... So it seems like, I guess, it's not just sunlight that restricts, that will damage him. It's any luminescence. Like, any light whatsoever.
There is a part later where he takes his glove off and he kind of... It looks like he's going to put his hand in a candle. It's shall we say, ill-defined?
This is not a film with a coherent internal universe.
No.
So he goes back to his dad, and I've written down the back and forth dialogue between him and his father when he is frustrated at having to wear the suit, and he says, you're tired, son. And Brad Pitt responds, yes, sick and tired of this farce. And my line reading just then was better than Brad Pitt's.
It's astonishing. It's astonishing because, like, we are all, you and me now, right? I don't think we sound unconvincing.
We're not reading a script.
No, but so why the fuck can't Brad Pitt act like a normal human being? He resembles one when the cameras aren't turned on. What happens when the camera turns on that makes him completely forget everything about what it means to be human? Which is what he does in this film.
It really feels like he's performing in a commercial for a pretty low rent clothing store.
Yeah, or a snuff film. It really feels like there is someone standing on the other end with a rifle, being like, bigger, you know.
Yeah.
Use your hands more.
Be less convincing.
Yeah.
More performative.
And then this is the point in the film where Pitt decides he's doing away with the suit, which, as we say, is a decision that makes no sense at all. His life in the suit is pretty good.
Yeah.
He looks kind of cool.
The only thing it would be protective if he fell off the motorcycle as well. It would, guard his skin.
He must be hot, is the thing I was thinking.
Yes, so. But, I mean, what does it actually restrict him from doing? Being seen... Having his face be seen. Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying it would be nice to be in that situation, but the stakes being that you will die in 3 days in the most excruciating way imaginable seems like a strong disincentive
to taking the suit up.
But yeah, so what does it actually prevent?
What I thought is, why not fucking, aren't there places where it's like dark for 3 months?
Yeah, go
isn't
to...
Isn't that the premise of 30 days of night? Yeah, go to Greenland. Move out of Greenland in the summer, of course. Like, that's going to be a tricky time for you. Go for the winter. I don't... There's darker places than, like...
Well, this has a healer, Czechoslovakia.
It does. It has Moses.
So he...
He derobes. He takes the suit
in the house, right? Yeah. And you see a Brad Pitt who looks maybe 16, although apparently he's 25. Young.
His hair is so floppy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's worth... I mean, obviously a big part of Pitt that we didn't even really talk about last time is, particularly nowadays, I think he might be one of the most attractive people...
On Earth.
I genuinely think that. Yeah. I really don't think that's hyperbole.
No, I agree.
Hyperbole. I just don't know who else I would say.
Especially the way he moves through space. I cannot imagine. There's no one to me comes to mind who is as charismatic in their presence.
Absolutely. It's not... It's instantly attractive.
It's magical.
In every sense of the word.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing, which I guess is something that we'll chart as we're going through the podcast, Brad Pitt has gotten hotter. Brad Pitt...
Unequivocally.
Brad Pitt, when he started out in this film, he looks like a child. Mm-hmm. He looks completely unthreatening in every way.
Yeah.
He looks like a doll. There's nothing about him which looks like lustful or... He doesn't seem to inhabit his flesh at all. He seems to be made out of porcelain.
I mean, that's an aspect which is enhanced by the... bleach white makeup that's been layered over him in order to evoke his sunlessness.
Which, can I say, I don't know why, it's my favourite part of the film, that he's so pale. He's so pale. It made me think, I wish people just did that more often, that you just picked a film and you had one actor be really pale in the film. Like Apocalypse Now. Mm. If, like, I guess Marlon Brando is pretty pale. That's why that film works, right? You just have someone look like...
Ghostly.
Look like they're wearing sad clown makeup. Mm. Just for no reason.
Which Pitt especially does in one later scene where his lips get extremely bright. In like the birthday scene.
They must paint his lips pink in an attempt to make his skin look paler.
Yeah.
But then this is the moment that we have to talk about. This is, and we talked about in Ad Astra, the Ad Astra episode, we talked about the sense of being slack-jawed, which is what I look for in movies. What I want to see is a scene that really just words fail me, right? Like cinematic transcendence.
Is this going to be a Brad Pitt animal?
Brad
scene, Pitt, like thread through the podcast.
Brad Pitt gets in the fucking ocean. It looks like a shark is approaching him. Right, step one. That's great. I'm thinking like, is this a shark movie now? I would love this
I
to be a shark.
That.
Yeah, get Brad Pitt killed by a shark. Let's see where we go from there. Like, it's like an improv class. Yeah, like, give me something. Come on. It's not a shark. It's something maybe even better. It's a dolphin that comes up, wants to play with him. It's like whacking his face.
Well, later, Brad Pitt describes this scene as the dolphin having taught him how to swim.
That is not clear, like most things in this film. That's what I mean about this film feeling like it's a concussed film.
So something I want to dwell on in the lead up to the dolphin interaction is that Pitt, first thing he does, it's daytime, he's thrown away his suit. He looks pale, but he looks basically normal. He's not immediately breaking out in sores. He has beautiful Brad Pitt skin. He runs to the shoreline and prances along the water, jumps up and down on the edge of the ocean, doing initially something that would have been entirely possible in the suit. Jumping around in the water. True. He's got full-length pants on. Body is still mostly covered. What he is enjoying is something he could absolutely have enjoyed in his previous life. That is, I don't understand.
But maybe that's the sense in which we're being ungenerous to this film. Mm. Maybe the point of the film is that actually Pitt... The gimp suit is an entirely self-made prison.
Sure.
That actually the film is on our side and is saying, like, yeah, the dude just doesn't realize what he can do. And it's actually an invisible boundary that falls away. And the tragedy of the film is that he doesn't realize that he can have everything he wants and keep on living.
Actually, I mean, it's compelling in that is a really interesting take on this film. There is no way anyone creation of this film with that philosophy. But that is interesting. I'll buy that.
Yeah, and then you have dolphin. What's my next, like, blood... I wrote pale. I wrote dolphin.
I have dolphin exclamation point, and then they order a bottle of scotch.
They do? Yeah,
is there a moment... What, between dolphin and that?
No, I think then next you have Pitt at a bar with his dad, and... No, Pitt at a bar with Pitt just at the bar by himself.
Okay, yeah. So Pitt goes to the bar. We go back in the town square where the parade was, where the theatre fest was, where everything in town takes place. He goes to the bar. He sees... What's the woman's name again? Francis. And he... Has he met her earlier?
Well, he's met her as Gimp Suit. That's right, of course. This is the first time that he's met her as Brad Pitt. And she...
In the town.
Really friend zones him. While we were watching the film, I was like, he has been cucked by himself. She's
interested in the man in the suit.
Yeah. And
whoever that may be.
Ed then attacks Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
And the response of the bartender in this bar is to turn up the music. And it's like royalty free. Later, the music on the fucking radio is This Old Man.
The instrumental version of This Old Man, not the lyrics. They couldn't afford those. So it's this really very deliberate... So as soon as this fight breaks out, Brad Pitt gets beer poured on his head in the bar. And a fight breaks out. Three guys beating up Brad Pitt. But there's this deliberate shot of the bartender being like, better turn up the music. So these guys beat up Brad Pitt.
With the music playing. Loudly. Louder than it was minutes before.
And he gets a beer poured on his head. He gets dragged out of the bar. But there's a very strange moment, which, I mean, who knows what this means? Nothing in this film means anything. The bartender, who is helping him out, seems to be helping him, douses him with a bucket of water.
It's like a garbage bucket of water as well. Yeah. It's like a tin pail.
But it doesn't seem to be done with any malice.
No. That's the sense in which this is a snuff film being masterminded by a serial killer.
Going through the motions.
Speaking a language that we do not understand, like, trying to tell us stuff, but, like, we were talking... You mentioned Foster Wallace before, right?
Yeah.
Like, the opening of Infinite Jest being about this guy who just, like...
Has lost the ability to communicate.
Has this rich interior life and understands everything perfectly, but when he thinks he's speaking coherently, it's like very scary, garbled nonsense.
That's exactly what this film feels like. Yeah. It feels like someone who is expressing themselves, and every like button they press of expression, it comes out, it translates into something incomprehensible.
Like really unnerving white noise. Because the person who made this film either has no interior life at all, or an interior life so fucked up that I would be scared of them if I met them
on the dark alley. Yeah. There's something twisted, like the Joker, about this this film. Although, look, so he gets in a car with...
Francis. It's just sliding out of
my
brain.
I think my mind is really resisting retaining this film.
I think so. I think...
We couldn't record this podcast tomorrow.
No. I think your brain is aware that... You need to jettison this stuff to like continue to move through the world.
Definitely. You can't retain it because you'll try to interpret it as we are doing here and you'll become incoherent. You'll go mad. Yeah. So he gets in a car with Francis. They drive to the beach.
Yeah.
And the chronology is already just all getting muddled in my mind, but he's not in his suit.
The idea at this stage broadly is that he's having this basically... like menage a trois, like love triangle relationship with Gimp, Brad Pitt, naked Brad Pitt, and Francis. Yeah. And she she's only into leather, and he lusts after her as non-leather.
He takes her back to the house. That's right. Sure. He takes her back to the villa.
And nothing happens.
The father finds out that, no, nothing does happen at the villa. The father does find out. So Brad Pitt's father, who cares a great deal for Brad Pitt, but not enough to stop him murdering himself by being exposed to light, discovers that Brad Pitt's been beaten up because he's got some blood on him, I guess, which looks very painted on and not to be actually coming from any actual wounds.
Yeah.
The father says, I've got some business to attend to. I've got to get out of here. I've got some business to attend to. He drives into town. This guy, so I think how I described him while we were watching the film was a low-rent Tim Heidecker.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of middle-aged. He has...
American.
Very American. Has some terrible sunglasses. Is not... in any way a distinguishable character, which is why I'm struggling to come up with adjectives for him.
You know, the Heidecker thing makes me think that, like, another way of describing this film is that this is...
Oh, yeah, of course.
This is a film starring the tethered of all of the, like, from Us. You know, in Us, there's the everyday people and then they have their, like, demented
underground
opposites.
Folk.
Yeah, this film is written, directed, and stars underground folk.
Yeah, who are... attempting to mimic
normal human life and interaction.
And doing it in such a way that it is profoundly unsettling.
Yeah.
If there were an uncanny valley that did not refer to like technological replications, this would fit
just
into
human.
That category.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Human experience.
What Freud would call unheimlich. So Brad Pitt's father in, again, I guess this is meant to express his love and affection for his son, Brad Pitt. Sure. But he goes into town, he goes up to the bartender, in one moment of this film, which I would refer to as sublime, is about to turn up. So he goes to the bartender and he says, "Who are the guys who beat up the American in here earlier?" or whatever. Mm-hmm. And the bartender, I guess, points him in the direction of these three louts at this table. So these three American guys who came there for the theater fest with Francis. And so Brad Pitt's father wanders to the table and just beats the shit out of them.
For vengeance for them beating up his own son.
Yeah.
He fucks them up. And
but very easily. Like, they each drop with, like, one punch from this oldish man.
Yeah. And I think this is the sublime moment you're referring to. Yeah. Because...
Right? in preparation for this moment...
The bartender turns up the radio.
Yeah, again. He does. In what could actually be the same shot
it as could previously. So my question is, does the bartender have a lot of fights in this bar?
Yeah.
And, like, standard operating procedure is, like, oh, there's trouble, radio goes right up. Yeah. It's like a trigger finger. He doesn't even think about it. It's Pavlovian response. Or did he turn up the radio when Brad Pitt was getting beaten up? And he was like, afterwards, he reflected on it. He was like, that really worked. If that happens again, I'm going to fucking turn the radio way up.
You've got to be consistent.
That moment is astonishing. And that's an example of something that, like, if you tell me that that happens in a film, there's a part of me that's like, maybe I have to sit down and watch that film.
You don't.
Not this one. You do not.
There's another extraordinary moment after this.
Yeah.
Where Brad Pitt's father goes up to the bartender, gives him some money for the damage, which there's not really going to be any damage. He also says you can buy these guys a drink when they recover.
Which is bizarre.
Which doesn't make any sense. And then he clocks the bartender.
I found that genuinely upsetting. I was really... Yeah. The bartender, the man's just standing there with his radio. His causal connection to the fight is he turned up the radio.
And he also pointed Brad Pitt's dad in the direction of the perpetrators.
And looks hurt. He looks disappointed. He's been upset that he's been punched in the face for no reason. It's fucking bonkers.
He's done nothing wrong.
I've only got three more notes, so we might as well go to the next one. My next one says, man squishing condoms.
That's right.
There is another moment of...
This is maybe the most baffling moment in the entire film. I don't understand what's going on.
Brad Pitt sees this old guy who's sitting there smoking outside the bar, throwing cigarettes on the ground and stomping.
This is earlier in the film.
Earlier out.
Yeah.
Brad Pitt then, around this time, sees the guy again sitting in the same position. Instead of throwing cigarettes on the ground, there's just condoms, tons
like,
of condoms.
Yeah, like 30 or 40.
And he's grounding into the pavement.
With his foot, as he would a cigarette that was being extinguished.
And Brad Pitt says, well, I don't know. Brad Pitt says some like muffled line about, doing? Like, what are you doing? The guy's like, quit smoking.
Yeah, he says, like, I quit smoking, which is like a Yoko Ono art piece.
Sure, which then comes back in what I suppose this is all for, is the punchline is further into the film. The dude is smoking again, and Brad Pitt's like, why are you smoking? And the guy's like, I quit sex now. Yeah. And the room bursts into laughter.
Everyone loves
despite
it.
Despite the fact that no one knows what the fuck is going... Only Brad Pitt saw the condom thing. Yeah. And also, is the guy squishing condoms...
That he has used?
Yeah, or is he just being performative? Does he want someone to come over and be like, hey, man, the condoms, we got to talk. Like, yeah. It's astonishing.
At least he is practicing safe sex.
I guess so. But he quit it.
That's true.
So he has a shelf of condoms and he's like, right, fuck that. You know?
This almost doesn't need to be said because it could be said for literally every single thing in this film. But you might get the impression as we talk about that scene that it is in some way resonant with the absurdity or strangeness of this film, but it isn't.
No.
Like, it's a totally out of place scene. Every scene in this film feels out of place.
Yeah, there's no connection to the film whatsoever. No scene links to each other's scene in a meaningful way because we're barreling towards the conclusion of this film.
Brad Pitt and his dad go back to the bar where the men were. The men just aren't there. They never return.
No.
So that was them dealt with maybe two thirds, maybe halfway into the film.
Yeah. And there's a sense in which everyone wants Pitt to put on the suit. He refuses. It's Brad Pitt's dad's fucking birthday. And
You skipped the motorcycle race.
Oh, sure.
So this is a pursuit. Brad Pitt's back in his suit.
Yeah.
Have we said how impossible it is to hear literally everything Brad Pitt in his suit says? Yeah, genuinely.
You could have ADR'd everything. As you say, his mouth's not moving. Why do you need to use the take that is Brad Pitt in a gimp suit? I suppose because it's realism,
it's
right?
Realism, but yeah.
It's like... Bresson. It's the flourish of, like... No, Bresson maybe is the touch point for this film. Okay. Bresson who thought that, like... Bresson thought that actors weren't actors, and that was a hangover from theatre, that actually what you wanted film actors to do was to be models. You wanted them to be looked at. You didn't want them to do almost anything.
Which you could make an argument for that in this film, except Brad Pitt is doing so much true. Acting.
Everyone else aside from Brad Pitt looks like they've been hypnotized.
Brad Pitt is distinct in this film, and I wonder what this film would look like if Brad Pitt had not become Brad Pitt. I mean,
sure.
Definitely no one would watch it. But what is that guy doing in this film?
If Brad Pitt is not Brad Pitt and this film exists, this film becomes like the Antichrist's Creed, right? Because the one thing that's legible in this film is Brad Pitt. When you take out the words Brad Pitt and it's just some American guy, it becomes like a terrifying transmission from like the outer recesses of space.
Yeah. The one thing
that is stopping my brain from slopping out of my head right now is I can say Brad Pitt like a safe word to calm myself
down. Totally true. Yeah.
There's like a tether to the world that I recognize and know.
Yeah. Because otherwise this is, again, incoherent seems insufficient. Deranged, perhaps. But again, not deranged in the way that, like, David Lynch, that, like, Eraserhead is deranged.
Which is maybe why we do ultimately need art like this, right? I think art has to represent...
all perspectives.
Do I even believe that? I don't know if I do believe that. I certainly believe that we were talking when we'd finished watching this film and you were like, what's the star rating you would give to this film? And I said, I think this is a 1-star film as opposed to a 0.5-star film. And I think my distinction, the reason I make that distinction is this film does not seem calculated in any way. It seems like a complete haphazard, like molecules have just been thrown together and just clapped together in one exact way.
Sure.
So that means it doesn't have evil intent. Doesn't have unpleasant intent. And also, why do I watch movies? I watch movies to be transported.
Sure. This is transporting.
I was... I was above myself.
As is a decaying city bus.
Exactly.
Is transporting.
Exactly. As is the inside of a dead cow, you know?
Sure.
They should slap that on the poster for this film. As good as the inside of a dead cow. Because what is... We should absolutely wrap up this mess.
Well, the motorcycle race. I just want to talk about
the motorcycle race. Sure, go on.
So Brad Pitt is in the costume, in the suit. He goes to the beach. He's on his motorcycle with Francis. I got that.
You did well, done.
And he encounters the man who referred to him earlier as Frankenstein. And this guy, let's call him Frankenstein, has with him an entourage of people who look like they are from... a music video made by someone who saw Baywatch once through a blindfold and had to recreate it with $8 and Europeans. And so they're all kind of standing behind this man as this man sees Brad Pitt approach on his motorcycle and challenges him to a race, the parameters of which are left entirely undefined, on a beach on which much of the sand is wet. And so the motorcycle race, Brad Pitt, after being challenged enough, asks Francis for permission to embark on the race. He does. It's very slow. It's kind of, they're bogged for a significant portion of it. The Frenchman falls off his bike, and Brad Pitt, after like doing two kind of circuits of an area, wins.
See, this is where the auteur theory is helpful, right? Because like if nothing in this film has changed, but you slap the name David Lynch into it, and I've seen other David Lynch films, when I see a scene of these two men who are meant to be having a race, which is like a test of their masculine prowess.
Yeah.
When they say they're going to start the race, one of the women from the entourage rips off her top.
Shirt, yeah.
It's just one bit of bizarre nudity in the film. If it's Lynch, I think, okay, this is deliberate. This is meant to be
and
scary and futile. But there's nothing in the film to imply that the director is aware that this is actually like not triumphant. This is actually really scary and upsetting. And then Brad Pitt, like, ties up his relationship with Frances, really. She realizes that they sleep together.
That's what they go to his beach shack, which he has. He says, a fisherman once lived here.
Sure.
And then they sleep together in the beach shack. And she realizes it's Brad Pitt. Okay, oh my God. There's the birthday. Is the birthday?
No,
the birthday's next.
No, the birthday, yeah, maybe the birthday. It's Brad Pitt's dad's birthday. His mum's upstairs looking like a dead person.
And in, again, a moment which would be extraordinary in a Lynch film, Francis is singing a very sad song.
Yeah, for the dad's birthday.
Yeah. Oh, some of the lyrics are, "If my words have hurt you, I will trouble you no more."
This is for the dad's birthday.
For the dad's birthday. So the dad gets home. Oh, the dad has been drinking at the bar. I just have never felt I'm more upset to recount some events in my life.
Yeah.
The dad is drinking a full bottle of scotch at the bar. The dad gets home at what seems to be 11 p.m. is surprised by a surprise birthday party. And Francis is there with a band whose instruments, as Joe pointed out during the filming, during the screening, have nothing to do with what sounds like a Moog synthesizer playing a beat underneath.
And there are two, there's a guitar and a double bass player just like strumming with a look of terror in their eyes.
As if they have been given no instructions, as if they'd never seen the instruments before. No. The ailing, dying mother upstairs rolls her wheelchair to the top of the stairs, looks mournfully down the stairs, hearing the very sad singing below, goes back to her room. Brad Pitt in this scene looks particularly white. I think at some point, like just before he goes, he might have started to see some blotches on his skin. So the boils and sores are approaching. He then goes to the beach. He sleeps with Francis. When he leaves, Francis doesn't realize while he's sleeping with her, even though he takes the suit off, that it's Brad Pitt or that it's
Rick
Clayton. She realizes afterwards because he left his necklace there, which she had seen earlier on Rick Clayton. Who fucking cares?
Yeah, and then Rick is suddenly goes from very pale Rick to lasagna skin.
Yeah, so
he's dying. He's covered in scabs.
He looks leprous.
Like that. It's a switch has been flicked. He really looks like Freddy Krueger.
They had a makeup budget for one day, and they just did it all.
I'm genuinely sure that is. And I think the makeup budget was, let's cover him in glue.
Yeah, Freddy Krueger.
Yeah. And then he rides off into the sunset.
Very literally. In almost a piece of literalism that I found quite appealing. Yeah, he's riding
the sun is killing him. He's riding to his death, which is the sun.
We haven't seen the puppy again. We haven't seen the antagonists again. The father, earlier the father went to a church and prayed for Brad Pitt's recovery. Didn't pay off.
Because we don't, yeah, this is why I guess I started our conversation about this film being like, what is this film about? Because it's not about recovery. Because I never thought that Brad Pitt would get better again.
No, you know from the beginning that he's going to die.
Yeah, there's no sense in which anyone actually really cares. Like, when he's riding off into the sunset. We certainly didn't care. No, he says to his dad, like, see ya, Captain, or something. Like, you're going to fucking die.
Yeah, his family is not sufficiently distraught.
No.
Oh, he says goodbye to his mother, who sees him and... You could, I guess, say she looks shocked, but she just retains the facial expression that she has throughout the film of a pale, dying woman with no character or no purpose in the film. I really feel ill.
Yeah. It's a tough viewing experience. It's, you know, this is a thing that I broadly think is true, that, you know, there are lots of movies that you go to the cinema and you're like, that's a bad movie.
Yeah.
It's
Rambo Last Blood.
Rambo Last Blood. Them. I was going to pick Suicide Squad. That feels like an easy target. These are films that you come out and you're like, that's a bad
film. Failure of a film.
There is a level of competence to those films that does not exist here. But there is some understanding of the cinematic language. And I think that's just because there are a lot more people filming Suicide Squad and a lot more people filming Rambo Last Blood. So a lot more people saying to the director, what does this mean? Why do we have to stand here? Why do we have to point the cameras in that direction?
But I want to reflect on the fact that this is not, as you said, an enjoyable film like The Room is for its incompetence. No. It's like there are absolutely some interesting shots in this film. There is a moment where Brad Pitt says to Frances, when she makes some comment about he should take the suit off or something. Oh, also, there's an Edgar Allan Poe book that gets passed around. We need to talk about that. He says to Francis, you don't appear to be dying, kind of in contrast to him. That was a nice line. It moved me a little bit. By mistake, right? Like, no one's writing that out, thinking about its rhythm or texture. But it's just not worth watching. Like, it's not only not worth watching this film, it's just not... It's a actively negative experience.
It's time to close the chapter on this part of our lives forever, I think. Definitely. I hope that it's the last time we ever have cause to reflect on
this. I think I'm glad that we watched... I mean, we had to watch this film. This is the challenge we've set ourselves up for. But I do think it's interesting. I mean, I wonder how many megastars with the pull and influence and fame of Brad Pitt have started out their careers with a film this bad. Because it's not just like a low budget horror film that like is just playing out some cliches.
Yeah.
It's a spectacularly poor movie.
Well, we were talking about DiCaprio, right?
Mm.
Who starts off in Critters 3, which is a film... I like Critters 3.
Okay.
I know,
I've seen it. I'll see it one day.
I know DiCaprio does not like Critters 3, right? Like, I think you always think that your first film is like an embarrassment. But I genuinely think that Dark Side of the Sun is so bad that there's a possible world where this film... We should say this film was shelved due to the outbreak of the Croatian War of Independence, which is the craziest shit I have ever heard. It went straight to video. But I think there's a possible world where this film is better known. Maybe it comes out in America a little bit, or
yeah.
You get some kind of... And there's no Brad Pitt.
It ruins him.
I think he could not show this to anyone as a showreel. I think it's actually...
Oh, no frame in it.
It sets him back. I genuinely think this is like... This film shot for 7 weeks, the 7 wasted weeks of his life. He could have bussed tables in that time, and it would have helped his career more.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the story is, yeah, how does Brad Pitt bounce back? I mean, if this was his second film, it would have been worse, right? Sure,
a disaster.
Yeah.
But thankfully, actually, it, you know, when this film was over, Dan and I looked at each other like we had just seen someone do something, like, indescribably awful in front of us.
We'd been through something together.
Something awful.
Yeah.
I was so shocked and horrified that I looked through the films that we have coming up.
Uh-huh.
We have a respite from films like this for a little while.
Good.
Which is good for Pitt, too. I think Pitt... Maybe Bradley doesn't realize how bad this is. Maybe it's not a case of course correcting. Maybe it's a case of better jobs coming to him. Things go up. And maybe if he had one more film like this, there's no podcast, there's no career, there's no...
I mean, mainly no podcast. That's the real tragedy. Yeah. I was wondering watching this film, I was thinking, how often... a year does this movie emerge in Brad Pitt's mind? How often is he like, I start in...
I think if someone says to him, he's at a party, he's like at an LA party, he went to Lena Dunham's like 30th or recently, or her birthday, and I bet at a party someone says to him, hey Brad Pitt, have you ever swum with a dolphin? And he says like, well, actually...
Let me tell you.
My first film in that, I don't think... Because I couldn't find interviews, I can't find anything. I think he, like us... is keen to really eradicate this.
Well, earlier I said it would have been more of a disaster if it was his second film, and that is true in terms of his career, but this will always be the answer to Brad Pitt, what was your first film in which you starred? I guess
you can be funny because he... Certainly that in which you starred, because he's in Less Than Zero. Yeah. He could finagle it so he doesn't have to call it this his debut. You'd definitely say you were in Less Than Zero before you'd say you were in The Dark Side of the Sun.
For sure.
Yeah, so this is The Dark Side of the Sun. I don't think it's the worst film that I've ever seen.
It's up there for me.
Sure.
I would have to shuffle through my history.
Sure. I think ultimately this podcast and your company saved it. I think knowing that I would have a reason to communicate this horror made it. I could be an impartial witness.
Well, actually, yeah, no, I'll go back on that. Definitely not the worst film I've ever seen, specifically because it does not have a sufficiently coherent position for me to feel like it's antagonizing.
No. It doesn't want to hurt you.
No.
It wants your money. It wants you to pay the money to go into the cinema, even if you then leave the cinema.
Sure.
The film doesn't particularly care.
This director just wants to make another film.
Yeah, which he basically didn't.
I wonder why.
Fucking hell. The Dark Side of the Sun.
Yeah, stay away.
Stay away. Next week is where I really feel optimistic, Dan, that you are really going to enjoy the film Cutting Class.
I'm which excited is our for next it. Film. I mean, in contrast to this, anything will be a delight. Sure.
It's Brad Pitt back in America, taking a jock role, experimenting with a flippancy that he shows again later.
I think I'm just really interested to see Brad Pitt, a young Brad Pitt, act in a way that in some way demonstrates a modicum of skill.
Yeah.
Because this
is rough.
Doesn't.
No.
Okay.
This is a real problem for everyone involved.
Mm. Well, thank you so much for bearing with us.
Thank you for joining us with it. We're aware that like, if you've made it to like an hour in on a podcast about The Dark Side of the Sun, then like that's a...
It's a feat comparable with watching an hour of Dark Side of the Sun.
I genuinely believe that's true. So, thank you. Join us next week. As I say, we're going to be watching Cutting Class, a slasher, a good comedy slasher that's well aware of how silly it is.
Starring Brad Pitt.
Starring Bradley J. Pitts.
Until next time.
Until next time.